you have to have the right people that you've hired in the right place to handle this stuff. Most often, this area is going to provide the biggest value to a person's life.
Becoming a millionaire isn't just about growing your money. It's also about protecting and preserving your wealth by using the right financial strategies for your situation. Welcome. This is Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi. John has his Master's of Science in Financial Services and is a certified financial planner and the president of Epiphany Capital.
Time for another edition of Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi, certified financial planner and president at Epiphany Capital. And this week on the podcast, we're going to talk about estate planning with no regrets. Hopefully, that is the point that we're trying to get to on this. So there are a lot of folks, you know, they don't really care about leaving a financial legacy, and there are those that do. So it's important to eliminate some of the common estate planning mistakes that we can certainly step into. So on this episode, we're going to talk about a few of those and let John break some things down for us, from beneficiary designations to family conflict triggers and lots of other things. So let's dive in, get started today, this week on the show. John, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Good. How are you, Mark?
Doing pretty good, hanging out, looking forward to chatting with you about estate planning. It's, you know, it's not something that I think people sometimes get overly excited about, but as we start to get closer to retirement, it does take on more of an important feel or role to us, especially I think for many people once those grandkids show up. They're like, what do I want to leave, right? And how do I want to leave it? I talk with many people who say sometimes they're like, yeah, I wasn't thinking about estate planning and with my kids, but with my grandkids, it kind of changed that that mechanism a little bit. So whatever your trigger is, it's important to have an estate plan in place.
Yeah, and I think when people hear the word estate planning, they say, well, I ain't that rich. And
yeah,
it's
true.
Not just for the rich.
No.
Okay. It's really for, you know, middle America and up. And also it's not just for your financial assets, it's also for healthcare directives and guardianship of your minor children if you have minor children.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's very, very important.
Yeah, many things to discuss. So let's jump in. Let's get started. Failing to plan for expenses that can be foreseen is number one on my list, especially healthcare, right? We know some things are going to happen to us through retirement. We get to retirement, we're probably going to have to maybe get a car, you know, along the way or something, you know, whatever the case is. And we're planning for some of those. But how do you plan for, you know, a healthcare event that may or may not happen?
Yeah, you know, that's obviously through insurance, but if you are unable to make your own healthcare decisions, it's important to have powers of attorney that will allow someone else to make those healthcare decisions on your behalf. And so there are so many horror stories about someone not having that power of attorney,
right?
And there's a fight. It's, does the husband get to make that decision or the parents or
yeah.
the sister?
What was that? What was that case way back in quite a while back? Was it the Terry Schiavo case? I think that
yeah,
was a huge
right.
one that was national where it became, yeah, it came down to like the parents fighting with the husband and back and forth. So, yeah.
Oh, I know some personal people in my life that's happened to. So.
Yeah. And it's tearing families apart, right? Just for it's just avoidable.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally
absolutely.
Avoidable.
They have zero relations. The cousins don't talk to each other. You know, grandparents and grandkids are separated. It's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a mess. So it's pre-planning, right? I mean, there are some folks that don't like to plan, and there are some people that love to plan.
Right.
And whatever spectrum that you're on, and whatever you know, like or dislike, planning is going to make things smoother. That's
yep.
just a fact.
Yeah. Great point. All right. So make sure that, you know, again, you're getting those directives and those proper documents in place, because they can certainly be very important in that. And speaking of documents, let's go to number two, which is updating said documents and other things, beneficiary designations, right? So many people get tripped up here. This is the easiest of just about all these fixes, John, because it doesn't take much to update those. And so if you need to remove somebody or add somebody or whatever the case is, just get it done, because FYI, it doesn't matter what your will says, right? It's what the BD says.
That's right. Beneficiary designation will trump the will. When you should update it is maybe your children become the age of majority. Definitely when there's a divorce and a remarriage situation.
Yep.
Or even just a divorce situation.
Yeah.
That's when you need to look
yeah,
at it.
There's the big D's, John, is how I was taught to remember it. So divorce, disability, death.
That's a little late.
Yeah, yeah, true.
That's a little late.
But let's say you had your parent on there, and your parent passed away, right? You know, because you didn't have anybody else in your life, so then it might make to change that. So there's just some things that, you know, some easy ones to kind of, you know, again, remember.
And so here's the thing, and we talked about this in previous episodes. You probably have an investment guy. Beautiful. He's handling one piece of the pie, the investments.
Mm-hmm.
I think he feels that this is not my job.
Yeah, this is in a different realm.
Update your beneficiaries.
Right.
You just need to get it done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Financial planner is going to look at that estate piece of the pie and say, we need to get this done now, today. You get a divorce today, we're changing the beneficiary this afternoon. That's how important that is. So you have to have the right people that you've hired in the right place to handle this stuff. Most often, this area is going to provide the biggest value to a person's life. It's not investment, it's not insurance, it's not retirement. This is where the rubber meets the road.
Okay. So again, and the BDs, a lot of times it's very easy to fix. It's just updating some paperwork. You know, again, are you adding someone or you're moving someone? And don't forget, it's not just like your insurance policies and stuff too, right, John? It's like your 401ks and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Anything with a beneficiary designation, like your IRAs,
yeah,
your 401ks, annuity policies, life insurance policies.
Yep.
So,
quick and easy fix. You want to have any regrets there? I mean, every advisor I know has a story of, an ex-spouse being on some policy, you know, and the new spouse being like, what? It never took the other, you know, the prior person off, or she never took the prior husband off or whatever. It's not good, right? It's just not a place you want to be. So, and it's an easy fix to do it. Number three. Failing to take steps to avoid conflict and litigation amongst heirs and family members. And John, for this one, people go, well, I know my kids. My kids would never fight over, you know, whatever's left. It's a wonderful, noble feeling, but money makes people funny. And the second you think that your kids are not going to be the ones to do it, they're probably going to be the ones to do it. So why not just eliminate it by getting some of these things taken care of ahead of time?
So communication is the key.
For sure.
In my estate planning classes and charitable classes, they always tell us family communication is going to go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing that you can do is pretend like you have zero money, and then the kids wake up one day and they get a call from their attorney and they say, oh, by the way, your parents are dead and they left you $20 million. It's like, what? I didn't think my parents had, you know, two nickels to rub together.
Right. Right.
So I'll tell you a little.
And the gloves come off
story.
Right at that point, because they're like, well, they leave my sister or whatever, you know. So,
yeah, I'll tell you a personal story. I looked at, miraculously, all three kids were in the same room and they were off their phones. I said, hey, guys, listen up. I said, when mom and I die, my oldest is going to be the trustee. You're going to get a third each. And that last penny, I want you to throw away. Put it in a wishing well, but it's going to be down to a third, down to a penny. And I said, but Alyssa, my oldest, is going to control. She's going to control the administration, and she's going to be the trustee. And my youngest one goes, why does she get to control it?
Exactly.
And I said, do you want the money slower or faster? And she goes, faster. And I go, that's why she's controlling it. But everyone's going to get the exact same. And she goes, oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's just, obviously, that's not going to be the extent of my communication with them.
Sure, sure.
But
those initial conversations, right? And you keep planting those seeds. Yeah.
Right, right, right. It was just a small seed that I planted. Yeah. Exactly.
And it's funny because I'm the other way. So with my mom, who's 82, she has the three kids and I'm the youngest. And I'm the most responsible, and I don't have a problem telling the other two that, and they know it, right? You know, so it's like, you know, I'm going to be the one that has to handle it. So I'm the one that's in charge of all that stuff. Trust me, I don't really want to be, but I will, because I'm the most responsible.
It's a more of a burden than a blessing.
It really is.
At the end of the day, you know, you're getting the same as your brother or sister.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, and it's, you know, a sister's like, well, I want to make sure that I get this from mom. Okay, great. That's fine. You can have it. No problem. Right. You know, but if it's laid out ahead of time, it just kind of changes that. Because what are the odds that she could tick me off one day and I could go, oh, she really wants that you know, antique whatever, and I'm keeping it, right? Because I'm in charge. So just get it all spelled out, communication, and avoid the fights. And then you can have some peace of mind amongst the, you know, yourself when you pass.
Planning makes things go smoother.
Exactly. Okay. Let's talk about topic number four here on this conversation piece, which is transferring real estate while you're still alive versus at death. And I think this is just, I don't think there's any upsides to this here, John. If you have any, please share them. But to me, this just seems like bad, bad news in just about every walk of a scenario that I can think of.
I just had a client whose mother passed away, and she was sick. So she kind of knew that the time was about to come.
Right.
And she made sure all her beneficiary designations were going to the client. Client was an only child. And they made sure powers of attorneys were signed, so on and so forth. Now, the one thing they didn't do was to transfer the condo, either put it in a joint name or put it in a trust. But it had to go through the probate process. It was left in her will. And that was the only asset, thank God. And so what this new client has to do is they've got to go down to downtown Chicago, open up a probate estate, hire an attorney at $650 an hour, go through that. And then it's a 6-month process. But guess what? You know, in that 6 months, she's responsible for paying the property taxes, the assessments. And so it's just a financial drain right now, because as soon as it gets transferred into her name, she wants to sell it, right?
Yeah.
So, but again, because it hadn't been titled properly, it costs time, money, aggravation. Again, it's just not a good thing to do.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're transferring your home, and many people will think about doing this, I'm going to transfer it to my kid because I don't want the nursing home to get it or something like that. Well, they have a look back period. They go back and look at some things. You know, and the other downside to just transferring it to one of your kids while you're still alive is, you know, it becomes their asset. So what if they're in an accident, and what if they don't have enough money to cover that, or the insurance? That your home now is, you know, a fair game, you know, in the lawsuit that could come up, or they get a divorce, right? The ex-spouse could come after. So there's just a ton of reasons why it's not. Plus, they lose the step up in basis when you do sell it, you know, to your point. So it's like if you transfer it while you're still alive, they lose that step up in basis. But if you know, will it to them after at death or whatever, they get it when you're gone, then they get the step up in basis, which makes it much more efficient for them, which leads me into my fifth point, which is tax implications, right? So, you know, make sure you're leaving your estate tax efficiently.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a single person under $12,920,000 in 2023, you don't have anything to worry
which
about.
Most of us are not going to fall into there, right? But there are
little
things.
Yeah, but you got to watch out for, here's the catch.
Okay.
There's federal estate taxes, and there are state estate taxes.
Okay.
And so I know in the state of Illinois, $4 million is a threshold. So anything over $4 million is going to be subject to Illinois estate tax.
Now, is that like combined, like your total net worth, everything you own kind of combined?
Right. I mean, the calculations are pretty complex, but for today's example, let's just say it's your gross estate. Okay.
Okay.
It's not technically, but let's just say that it is.
Okay.
In Massachusetts, here's the crazy thing. Okay. So in Illinois, so let's say you die with $5 million.
Okay.
So $1 million would be subject to the estate tax.
Gotcha.
Now, you're going to want to check on this, but I heard in states like Massachusetts, if it's over $1 million, let's say it's $1.5 million, they retroactively tax from $1. Yeah. Not just what the overage is.
Right. The whole deal.
The whole shebang. So yeah. It's like, what in the world? So there's different ways to get money out of your estate. So that's a really complex conversation, but there are ways to do it.
And we can certainly do a podcast on some things, but we could touch on a couple real quick. But like, you know, life insurance. I mean, folks that are, you know, typically very wealthy use a lot of life insurance as a way to do different things. So that's something to ponder, right? You know, some people think, well, I don't need life insurance anymore because my kids are grown, and we kind of think of it as the traditional way of needing life insurance. But maybe that's a tool for your situation to look at for leaving money tax efficiently. Just one option.
Well, life insurance is a double-edged sword in that it's great for liquidity purposes, but that death benefit, if you own the policy when you die, that's going to be part of your gross estate.
Okay, so, good to know.
Yeah, so let's say I own a $20 million policy on my life, and then I die. And that $20 million is going to be part of my estate, and now I'm subject to estate tax.
Yeah, okay.
So you have to be careful. So what we generally do on that is we set up irrevocable life insurance trust.
Okay,
and
all right.
They become the owner. It's best if they own it from the onset instead of me transferring it over there, because there's a 3-year look back rule for that. So again, gotcha. Getting a little deep in the weeds, but I just got to cover that real quick.
No, absolutely. That's the whole point. We definitely appreciate that. Any other things from a tax implication standpoint that folks might want to consider when it goes there? I mean, obviously, like the removal of the stretch IRA a couple of years ago kind of changes things a little bit for if you're leaving your, 401k or your IRA to your, to your kids or something like that. You know, they have to now take that money out in a shorter time frame, things like, of that nature.
Highly appreciated assets is what I would do is I would not gift that. I would let my kids inherit it just simply from the step up in basis.
Right. Yeah.
Taxation standpoint. That's a big one. I can't really think of others off the bat, except that really you should have most, if not all of your assets, I like in a trust, because now you can roll from the grave, right? If you get a beneficiary designation, the other joint owner or the beneficiary, they get the money like today, like right away. And okay. Guess what? The national average is, no matter how big the inheritance is, it's gone in 18 months.
Yeah, that's wild.
So the trust says, my life insurance is, the trust is the beneficiary. So my life insurance proceeds go to the trust. And the trust says that it's going to give my kids a certain amount when they reach a certain age. They're not going to get it all at once because I want to teach them the value of work. And I don't want them to think, oh, a big bag of money just hit me in the head. I get to spend. So,
yeah. And to your point, when we started this conversation, sometimes people think estate planning is only for the rich. You've got to have an estate. I don't really have anything. Same thing with trust. Many people think, oh, trust, you got to be a Rockefeller to have one. And it's definitely not the case, right? So it can be a valuable tool for many folks, and they're typically not as costly as folks think they might be to get one set up. So if it's something you have on your mind, you got questions, that's why we do the podcast, to share some hopefully useful nuggets of information. So if you've got some questions about your estate plan, reach out to John. Make sure you're having a conversation, if you're not already working with him, with a qualified professional like John Choi, who is a certified financial planner and the president at Epiphany Capital. And again, you can find him online at johnchoi.net. That's johnchoi.net. And reach out to him and chat with him on whatever topic is top of mind for you. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, or Spotify. This has been Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi. John, thanks for hanging out, buddy.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And I will see you next time here on the show.
Take care, everyone.
Epiphany Capital is a registered investment advisor, RIA, located in the state of Illinois. Epiphany Capital provides investment advisory and related services for clients nationally. Epiphany Capital will maintain all applicable registration and licenses as required by various states in which Epiphany Capital conducts business, as applicable. Epiphany Capital renders individualized responses to persons in a particular state only after complying with all regulatory requirements or pursuant to an applicable state exemption or exclusion.